Hello, everyone. This is Maurice Bassett, and I'm happy to say I'm here with Steve Chandler today. And Steve and I are going to be talking about relationship, and Steve will be sharing his reflections on relationship today. So welcome, Steve.
Thank you very much, Maurice. You know, I wanted to do this very conversational, ad-lib, impromptu, but deeply prepared anyway, talk about the book Relationship, because a lot of people have asked me over the years about this book. And the book is about major gift fundraising, and it was written by my friend Mike Bassoff and myself. And it was written 25 years ago, as we're speaking today. And so a lot of the references in the book are outdated as far as the minor details, like the technology it recommends. I think that you get a little box of index cards to track your relationships. But, of course, you can do it in a better high-tech way these days. But the central principles in the book still work very profoundly, very effectively. And I wanted to talk about them. And I guess the key element in that book is something that I read about many years ago. I read a study of people in hospices on their deathbeds, and they were being interviewed and talked to about looking back over their lives. And the number one thing that people thought about was whether or not their lives had made a difference. In other words, was this planet any different because I was alive? Did I make a positive difference in the world? And this was the primary thought, reflection of people at the end of their lives. It wasn't about resentments or grudges or hurt feelings or anything like that. It wasn't about the things that they might have thought were meaningful during their lives. It was about difference making and whether the world was different, whether their family was different. And so some people were very much at peace because they might have been part of a very nice family that they contributed to, or a nice relationship, or they might have done a lot in their field, in their business, that made the business go well and gave people jobs. But the key thing was whether they made a difference. Now, that was important to me and to my friend and fundraising partner, Mike Bassoff, because we realized that if that's the fundamental thought inside people, it must be the fundamental thought inside major donors, people who give large gifts to organizations. They want to know, and this actually turned out to be true, not only in the research in the field, but in our experience with donors. Donors to organizations, to nonprofits, want to make a difference. And they want their donation to do something. And if at the end of their lives, or even in the middle of their lives, their donation really makes a difference in the world, really directly helps people, they want to give more after that. And if it doesn't, like about 90% of donations, you have no idea whether it made a difference. You give to some cause that you like, but you never know whether that money made a difference or not. And sometimes you'll read years later that 80% of the money you gave was used to pay the bureaucracy of the group you gave to. In other words, the people who collected the money paid themselves with your money, And very little of it actually went to build wells in Africa or do what you were hoping it would do. But either way, you didn't know. You didn't really know. So what we began to do when we started raising money many years ago for the Arizona Cancer Center, we were completely new at raising money. Neither of us had much of a background in it. Mike had been a track coach at the University of Arizona, and he moved over into the development department because he had led a successful run that raised money, small gifts. So they put him in charge of raising money for a cancer center that had not been built. It was just an idea. And he didn't know how to raise money. He didn't have a background in development, so he didn't know all the rules that people thought they needed to follow. And he brought me on board to help, and I had no background in raising money. At the time, I had a public relations and advertising firm, and I was just going to help him with the communication of whatever he was going to do. So here we were, two completely ignorant novices. And he said that when he recruited athletes into the athletic program, the most important thing was building relationships with the athlete and the family of the athlete, instead of trying to sell the university to the athlete or the family. He said that his system was to build a trusting relationship with the family and the athlete, and that by doing that, he was more successful recruiting athletes than other people and other universities in his conference. And so he said, I'm going to do that in fundraising. I'm going to have it be a relationship business, and I'm going to build relationships with donors, and I'm going to build relationships even before they give money, even before I ask for money. I'm going to find out what the donors really want in life, the kind of difference they want to make. I want to learn all about the donor and take my time and build a relationship. And I thought that was a great idea, and so we started doing that. And we found donors who had given a tiny amount, and we started creating relationships with them, finding out more about them, sending them more information about cancer research. And what we had done, looking back, was we had changed the relationship. In other words, we decided we were going to outgive the giver. And if the donor gave $100 to be a part of a group we formed to study cancer or to support cancer research, we would treat them as if they had given $1,000 or $10,000. We would get to know them. We'd take them to lunch. Mike would bring a doctor in to put on a slideshow about the latest research for a group of donors. And by outgiving the giver, in other words, having a disproportionate grateful relationship with the donor, disproportionate to the amount of money they gave, we began to receive larger and larger gifts. Not as a manipulation, but just as a very simple system. And what we found over time was you can't outgive the giver. Let's say you consider the universe to be the giver, or the brotherhood and sisterhood of mankind to be the giver, and we were giving to the giver. You can't outgive the giver. It will come back many times over, and that's what we found. Large gifts began to come in. Not because of how we sold the cancer center idea. But because of how people were treated, and we later called this relationship. So we would shift the relationship. So the donor would become the recipient of our information, but especially the recipient of evidence that they have made a difference. So anytime we could get evidence that their donation has made a difference, we would send that to them. So if a doctor came into Mike and said, thank you so much, because of this money, I'm able to do this research, Mike would say, don't thank me, thank Mrs. Johnson down in Green Valley, Arizona. She gave a nice gift. So the doctor would sit down and write her a letter and thank her. And that's that kind of giving back more than was given, that kind of gratitude being expressed along with evidence of difference making was our only system. That was the heart of what we did. But we raised a great deal more money than anyone ever expected. And we rarely had to ask for money because it just kept coming in. And later, as the system was up and running and we were doing really well, we wrote a book about it. And the original book, we didn't publish. It was just in spiral bound, published it. We printed up at Kinko's or somewhere and handed out. And it was called The Symbiosis System. And it talked about the relationship between the donor and the nonprofit person being, they both needed each other very badly, and they both needed each other. In other words, the donor needed and wanted a relationship in which he or she was shown that they were making a difference in the world and being powerful with the money they were donating, which other nonprofits were not doing. So we took this system, relationship, outgive the giver. We started giving seminars and doing consulting in this system. And we found that other organizations, when they employed the system, were getting the same kind of results if they really put it into their organization. They were getting the same kind of results. So we wrote the book, Relationship, Major Gift, Revolutionary Fundraising, I think we called it. It was for receiving major gifts. It wasn't about how to have a car wash or a bake sale to get money. It was about creating relationships with donors in such a way that the donor found you as their pet cause, and the donor now saw you, the fundraiser, as a way they could make a really big difference in life. And that's all they ever wanted to do with their lives anyway. So things were happening, like someone would tell Mike that I'm going to leave my estate to your cancer center because I'm not going to leave it to the children. They don't pay any attention to me anyway, and they're just going to spend it on things that aren't good for them. So I'm going to leave it to you because I know it'll make a difference. And that was the heart and soul of the book, Relationship. And it was so successful wherever we took it that it was almost a foolproof system. The only times it didn't work for people was when they were cynical, when they got real anxious about it, when they wanted an immediate result, things like that, where they weren't really dedicated to applying the system, then it would fall short, and they would go back to whatever their old system was, the system of visiting people and asking them for money. or getting rich people to go to the country club and ask their friends if they would give money, or getting the board, the fundraising board, to promise to each give $10,000. But those kinds of fundraising tactics are so limited that they have the donor really trying to give the minimum to get away with giving you the minimum and then forgetting about it, because they never heard after that what the money did. It never had a chance to become their pet cause. So Michael Bassoff was the full-on, all-day-long fundraiser in this, and I was fortunate to simply be helping him. I would come by and help him by creating the language and letters that we sent, or reports we sent, or ideas we had for forming startup groups that would later become people we would create relationships with. The system was so powerful that I was able to talk about it to other nonprofit groups. I would come in and consult with them on the issue of creating relationships and outgiving the giver and giving people a way to make a difference. And it was very successful, even though I myself was not a full-time development person. I was not a fundraiser. But I knew the system well enough now, and I saw how Michael Bassoff utilized it firsthand and was able to teach it to people. And they got great results. There was one client of mine in a small college who received a $100 million gift from an individual by using this system. And so over the years, that little book, Relationship, had made a big difference with anyone who really applied it in nonprofits. And it even worked on a small scale. So if there was a smaller nonprofit, like just say a men's chorus or some little group that didn't really need a ton of money, the principle still worked, that when people donated, the attention and care given to the donor was really key to receiving the unexpected larger gifts down the road. Now, one of the problems with the system was it didn't feed into people's anxiety about instant gratification in the world, people who need to see an immediate result tomorrow. Like if you have a bake sale or something like that, you pull in some money immediately. It's not a lot of money. In fact, many fundraising events cost as much to put on as they raise. And so the real value of a fundraising event like that is the relationships you begin by people who show up and donate a little bit because they like your cause. And if people would follow the relationship system and create a relationship out of that small donation, then larger donations come. Now, one of the biggest problems in this was that you never knew exactly when or where a larger donation would come. And it was that not knowing that made it powerful, because a lot of times people who had more financial resources than we knew ahead of time or that we had any awareness of would leave us a lot of money when they passed away, or would give us a lot of money, and they would say, you people had no idea that I was able to do this, and yet you treated me as if I had already done it. You treated me so well, and you got me so interested in your organization, and even when I gave $1,000, you showed me what that would do. You showed me the difference that made. I was later able to take this out to politicians and help them raise money. Congressman, I had a client who was a congressman who hated to ask for money for his campaign. So I explained the relationship system to him. And I said, how about you just thank people for the money they've already given? And he said, well, I'd love to do that. But we need money, and my campaign manager is telling me I need to get on the phone and ask for money. And I said, well, why don't you get on the phone and just thank people who have given money? Even if they've given a small amount, let them know what that money could do. So if somebody only gave you $100, let them know that $100 was able to buy us 3 radio spots in a little town in the district that helped the campaign. And so he began to do that, and the money started flowing in greater degree than when he was there doing something he hated called asking for money. Well, this system, as you've observed, Maurice, in our school for coaches, in where coaches, consultants, therapists, people in the helping profession are able to build their practices and become more prosperous, you can see the heart of that system is there. Even the system and the mindset you take to customer relations is the same thing. So a customer pays a certain amount, but is treated as if they paid a great deal more and is well cared for and taken care of. So it is outgiving the giver is still at the heart and soul of it. And you have a word for it in customer relations that I'm now forgetting. What do you call, what is it like?
Is it asymmetric giving?
Asymmetric, yes, asymmetric, because it looks a little out of whack. You know, it looks like it is a little out of balance. It doesn't make sense. So I know that sometimes people are interested in coming into the coaching school, for example, and just because they show some interest, you really treat them like royalty, and you give them all kinds of information, audios, ebooks, videos, really, in a way, the content of the school before they even consider signing up. And the approach is, we want to help you become a better coach, whether you come to our school or not. Now, great companies have found this. They have found this system out. They've stumbled upon this principle. Southwest Airlines years ago stumbled upon an idea of treating the customer with a great deal of love, lightheartedness, fun, making flying fun. That was years ago. I don't know if they still do it. Nordstrom would do this. Their customer relations were asymmetrical. They were absurd. You could return anything. You didn't need the receipt. You didn't need the item even. I mean, it was amazing. And people thought they were crazy, but Nordstrom grew from the reputation of how well they treated customers. People wanted to go there. It was really a breakthrough. And anytime someone tried to do it as a manipulation, it never quite worked. Your heart has to be in the right place. And there's a certain amount of faith that goes into this. But the results are there. That's the great thing, that where this system is applied, this relationship, the results are there, because we've seen that over the years. I've taken the central thought into sales teams where people are selling major things, major systems, high ticket items, and the salesperson changes from being the taker to the giver. Because most salespeople think of themselves as takers, taking people's money. And when you think of yourself that way, you then try to manipulate and persuade the person, and it dehumanizes the other person. The other person becomes a target of your marketing, a target of your selling, and the chance to create the relationship in which the other person feels understood, cared for, and listened to, that goes out the window. Because I, as a salesperson, in my own mind, I'm trying to take your time and take your money, so I'm looking for ways to manipulate you into doing that, to trick you. And if I think of my day as waking up and trying to trick people into parting with their money or trying to persuade them to part with their money, my heart is not in the right place. This is not a lot of fun for me. I can become very cynical and very phony as a human being. And the result of that is I don't look forward to my work. And when I don't look forward to my work, I don't give it a lot of energy or creativity, and the downward spiral happens. That's why so many people fail at selling, and so many people they think of selling in such negative terms. They really think of it as the last house on the block. You know, I've lost my jobs, and I guess I could sell for a living, but that would be the last resort. And this system, which originated in the world of fundraising, gives people life. It gives them a way to enjoy their work. And I know for you, you actually enjoy asymmetrical giving and taking care of people and not wondering, not trying to calculate if this person is going to join our program or not, or whether they have enough money, but just treating them as if they've already joined.
Yes, absolutely. You can't have that in mind when you're giving. You can't think about what the return is going to be. You have to really be focused on serving.
That's it. And yet, the return is there. As we've shown, we do so little standardized or regular marketing and advertising for the school. Our time and attention is spent on people who've shown even the slightest interest, and we take great care of those people, whether they come into the school or not. And they can feel that, and they appreciate that, and they can really sense that from you. I have people telling me all the time how great it is to interact with you, because they know and they can feel that your heart is in the right place and you really care about their coaching practice or whatever it is, their life getting better. And I found that out from you when I first started dealing with you. I was interested in Colin Wilson's books and audios, and you were publishing a number of those, and you had the rights to a lot of those things. And I would order something from you, because he was pretty obscure in the United States. He wasn't ever a major figure. And one of the reasons was because he was a philosopher who was a complete optimist about life. And that in philosophy circles, intellectual circles, that fell out of favor, because intellectuals are supposed to be critical, cynical, pessimistic realists. And they end up even being nihilists, but they have great regard in the New York Times and other cynical looks at life and humanity. Colin Wilson was the opposite. He was brilliant intellectually, a brilliant thinker, but a total optimist about human beings and their potential and their unrealized potential. I remember he used to say that if people really understood that life was pure opportunity, that pessimism would be a laughable absurdity as a way to do life. And that was his central approach, which was very powerful for me, really changed my life to read him. But also I noticed that whenever I ordered something from you, you'd send me extra things. Like I would order a talk he gave at Esalen, and you'd send me two other talks that you thought I might like. And I was blown away by that. I thought, wow, this is, I'm getting more than I'm paying for. And then you and I, out of that, formed a relationship. We stayed in touch with each other. And you then became my publisher for my books and my audios and became director of the Prosperity Coaching School. And one thing led to another. So results occur. It's not as if it doesn't get, if it's a naive blue sky system that doesn't get real world results. It does get real world results. I mean, a $100 million gift is real. And people, that's the real thing. And that comes directly out of the fact that this donor who gave the gift, the fundraising professional who had learned and operated from this system, had created a relationship with this person that treated him as if he'd already given that money and didn't go around continuously asking him for more money, but rather expressing gratitude and evidence that the money he'd already given had made a major difference. And that's the power of difference making. When you show the donor that their money is making a difference, they want to give more. That's very intoxicating to see that your donation has made a difference in the world, because difference making is such a, at the heart, is such a big thing for people, even if they can't articulate it, even if they don't consciously know it. If you give people a way to make a difference, help them make a difference in life, and help them realize their own potential to make a difference, that's a huge gift. And I think that's what you do when people inquire about the coaching school. You help them make a difference as a coach, whether they come to the school or not. So, and the same is true with salespeople. You'll notice even when you buy a car that there's one kind of salesperson that when you get out of your car at the car lot, who immediately you get this funny feeling that you need to get back in your car and leave, because there's a sense of persuasion and manipulation. Even if the person has this big grin and is learning your first name and using it a lot and doing all these techniques to sell and persuade you, you still feel like a target instead of a person. But then maybe on another car lot, you go there and somebody is a little more relaxed, a little more heartfelt, and is asking you what you're looking for and really listening to you and not being pushy. And then you start to feel, I like this person, or I trust this person, or I'm getting a feeling that this person really wants to help me get the car that I want. And that's the kind of person I'll talk to for a long time and maybe come back and talk to again. That's true in sales anywhere. So after I did the, after Michael and I did the relationship work in fundraising, and I went out later in life and started giving seminars, I would give seminars and workshops to sales teams with this teaching or this idea, this philosophy, the relationship idea at the heart and soul of it, and let them see that it's the relationship you create with the buyer, the potential buyer, that makes the sale more likely to happen. It's that approach that works best. And the really successful salespeople, they do it that way. They look forward to their work. They, when they call a person on the phone, they don't feel like they're trying to take their time and take their money, and they don't feel self-conscious about that. They really feel like they're giving someone an opportunity to have a better life through whatever service or product they have. So they're not afraid to talk to people. They're not afraid to communicate with people because their whole motivation is to help. It isn't to manipulate. And it's such a successful system when it's applied. I ended up training over 30 Fortune 500 companies over the years before I became a coach. And even though it looked to them like a sophisticated form of large fee sales or whatever you call it, high-end selling, it was really what Michael Bassoff showed me in relationships, in how he created relationships with donors. He's now the director of development at TGen in Phoenix, which is translational genomics. And that was a whole new field. So when they started that, it was taking the human genome system and applying it to medicine. When he started that with a bunch of innovative doctors and research scientists, he didn't have a backlog or a group of people who had already donated to that cause, like it would have been with cancer or heart disease or diabetes. He started from zero. They didn't even know what genomics meant in the world. So he started from absolute zero, and he created relationships there. It's really successful now as a center. But he created it from showing people how they could make a difference in life, teaching them about genomics and the genetic system and the future of medicine, but you could alter the gene code in a human, and that was all new to people who were in a position to give money. So that was a huge challenge for him. Most people going into fundraising, if they go to a university, you already have a list of donors who are giving to Notre Dame because they love Notre Dame or giving. He had nothing of the kind. And so the system of relationship was really given a test. And he pulled it off. He's super successful right now. He had been successful in other places that he went. After he left the cancer center and went to New Jersey and went to a medical organization there and broke all kinds of records for raising money, but still using a very simple system of outgiving the giver and giving people a way to make a difference. So that's my little audio reflection on what that book's about. A lot of people ask me, what's that book about? It's kind of old. Does it still apply? And do you have it on audio? We don't have it on audio yet. I will do that someday, but I thought it would be fun and good and helpful, maybe, to people if we, you and I, created a conversational ad lib audio about the heart and soul of that book. What does it teach? And the book itself goes through different myths that fundraisers have about how you need to raise money for your organization. And those myths, we call them myths because Michael and I did the opposite of those things. We didn't even know that those things were the rules. We were told later we were breaking all the rules. But we did the opposite of those things, and we made more money. We brought in more money than people who were following the standardized rules. But those rules and those myths about how to raise money, myths about how to sell yourself, personal branding, marketing, anything based on manipulation, anything that targets your customer or your client as a target, as if they were alien beings, you know. How do you talk to them? What words do you use? The same kind of questions you'd ask if you landed on another planet and you didn't know. What are their ways? What do these aliens want? And how do we? What are the trigger words, the buzzwords that get them to buy? And the more we distance ourselves from these people, the harder it is to have a great result and create the kind of relationships, long-term customer loyalty, donors who give major gifts, and in our case, students who come to our school and then come back to the school. We even do it within the school. We always give more than what they sign up for. And that leads to them referring other people to the school and then coming back and doing the school more than once. So the results are there. In the last 25 years, wherever this system, if you want to call it, this approach has been applied, the results are great. So it's not as if this is some kind of spiritual, blue sky, naive approach. If the results weren't there, we wouldn't even be talking right now. I'd be doing some other job. But the results are great. And one of the reasons I love working with you is that you already had it in your system, however you got it, as a way of being, a way of operating in the world. And you've just kept improving and made it an art form. And because you have, so many coaches have come through the school who wouldn't have come through and improved their practices, and now they're coaching clients, and it's spreading around the world.
Thank you, Steve.
So, yeah.
And I just want to say, you know, I just treat people the way that I myself would like to be treated, and I like to be treated very well.
Yeah. And don't you notice it when you go into some place of business, even a restaurant, where they just sort of treat you like a non-human? And you notice it so profoundly. It's very noticeable. Bad customer service is just so painfully noticeable. And then the opposite of it is we're so grateful and appreciative when people go the extra mile. I know even when I get a cab or an Uber ride, or and the cab driver is playing his own music really loud in the front of the car, doesn't say a word, drives in a crazy way, has no relationship to the passenger. It's just trying to get through the day in a bitter way. And I give a tip, but it's just the traditional, normal tip. But when somebody is especially good at creating a relationship, there's a driver who drives me to the airport and takes me around where I live, and it's much more expensive than a cheaper way of being, but he's so gracious and kind and friendly and runs up to the step and grabs the suitcases and then in the drive has really great conversation, gives me all kinds of information about the city I'm in. And so I'll give a bigger tip to that person. So even in that situation, it does get results.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't want to go longer than we have to here. I think I'm hoping I made the point about what's at the heart and soul of this whole relationship idea. The book's available on Amazon if you want it. And get interested in it. If you're in sales or any kind of business that's a struggle and you're treating people in a way that doesn't feel quite right to you, take some interest in this approach and see if it's a fit for you, because it sure has paid off for the people we've taught this to over the last 25 years. And it will continue to pay off. So thank you, Maurice. Thanks for giving me a chance to talk about this.
Wonderful, Steve. And it's my pleasure, absolutely. I'll be adding this audio program to our Steve Chandler audio catalog on stevechandler.com, and that'll be available for anyone who wants it.
All right. Thank you.